It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The legal vice may be tightening on President Trump's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn. Multiple sources familiar with the investigation tell NBC News federal investigators have gathered enough evidence to bring charges in their investigation of Flynn and his son, Michael G. Flynn. The elder Flynn was fired after just 24 days on the job for lying about his contacts with the Russian ambassador. Mr. Trump has downplayed any connections between Flynn and Russia.
I do think he's a fine man.
Under scrutiny, Flynn was paid nearly $34,000 to speak at a 2015 Moscow gala and seen sitting next to the Russian President Vladimir Putin while he was informally advising the Trump campaign. Sources indicate Special Counsel Robert Mueller is zeroing in on Flynn's lobbying work and whether he laundered money or lied to federal authorities about his overseas contacts and whether Flynn attempted to orchestrate the removal of a chief rival of Turkey's president from the U.S. to Turkey in exchange for millions of dollars. Sources confirm Flynn's son, who worked on the Trump campaign and briefly on the transition, could also face charges.
If Michael Flynn, the elder Michael Flynn, were to cooperate with investigators, that could both save his son and potentially limit any consequences that he himself faces.
That was the breathless reporting of NBC in November of 2017. And I have to tell you, when I think I have no more outrage left, and I'm reminded of what our government did to people affiliated with Donald Trump and even beyond that, General Flynn, who before President Trump ever was, you know, on the radar, was fighting back at the left in his capacity as a lieutenant general, as his position as director of national intelligence. We could go on and on. But it's not just Flynn. It's lots of people who have been so badly treated. That's an understatement. By the current justice system, it is appalling and shocking. And that's why our next guest has written a new book. It's called Conviction Machine, Standing Up to the Federal Prosecutorial Abuse. Sidney Powell is a familiar name by now. She's been our guest several times, but she's been very busy these past several months, more than a year, representing Lieutenant General Flynn in the aftermath of that prosecution. And she joins us this morning. Sidney, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Sandy.
I'm guessing that might take you back in time, too. Just an overview. They actually have managed to pretty much financially destroy General Flynn and his son. Is that right?
Yes, we're working from a defense fund that members of the public have contributed to for two years or so now. And it's through their generosity that we have been able to pursue a vigorous defense on his behalf since I came into the case and discovered all kinds of things the government had withheld from him. In fact, I learned that they actually made up the entire case, and their whole narrative was necessary to keep the obstruction hoax going against the president because they knew there was no Russia collusion from the beginning, including when they ambush interviewed General Flynn on January 24th in the White House.
Yeah. I want to talk about the details. I do want to get into that. But I'm reminded again with that report of how excited, and I said breathless, but excited the reporters, all of the media, it reminds us of how they came down against not just General Flynn, but certainly President Trump. And that's what we heard for years, Sidney. Every night we heard
And it was all a lie.
Yes, it was.
Stories were nothing but the information fed to them by special counsel or the FBI that was all a lie.
It was all a lie, and we're going to talk about that. Sidney, let me give you a better introduction. Sidney is a former federal prosecutor, and she first was interviewed by me a few years ago when she wrote Licensed to Lie, in her experience as a in the Department of Justice, all the corruption that she saw. She has represented individuals, corporations, and governments in federal appeals for more than 20 years. She is past president of the American Academy of Appellate Lawyers and the Bar Association of the Fifth Circuit Court. You know, Sydney's just had tremendous amounts of experience as a prosecutor. And that one, I want to ask you a personal question, Sydney. You know, how did you get interested in criminal law? I mean, there are so many kinds of law you could practice. And here you are, this gal from Dallas, this pretty girl from Dallas. Why prosecution? Why criminal?
Well, I wound up in having an opportunity to work for the United States Attorney's Office in Raleigh, North Carolina, somewhere after my second year of law school. And then he helped me get a position with the U.S. Attorney in San Antonio the summer after my second year. I did appellate section work for them that summer and absolutely loved it, researching and writing briefs all summer. And I seemed to be a natural fit for it. I just kind of gravitated toward that, and my supervisor really liked my work, so they hired me back. So I went in the U.S. Attorney's Office straight out of law school, and I finished law school early. So I was the youngest assistant U.S. attorney in the country at the time, according to the FBI agents who did my background interview.
That's really amazing.
And criminal law is mainly constitutional law. That's part of why I like it. But I don't do much criminal defense work. I've only had about five or six criminal defense cases since I left the government as a prosecutor.
Sydney, my husband, when he grew up, became an FBI agent. But before that, he was a Cook County prosecutor in Chicago. And he still talks.
He's seen it all.
Yes, he has. And he still talks about that job. I think he'd still be there if it weren't for such horrible, dreadful low pay. I do think that in him I see, and in you I see, this real strong sense of right and wrong. Now, that's not always the case, and we're going to talk about that. That's why you're writing your book, because not all federal prosecutors have that sense. They get kind of drunk with their power, and that's why you've seen the bad effects of that and wrote this current book, Conviction Machine. I'm curious to know, you know, General Flynn was represented by a very well-known law firm, conservative law. I guess that's my description. Maybe it's not the common understanding, but has a good reputation, I think, in conservative circles. They were representing General Flynn, but they did such a poor job, and we found out that they had a conflict of interest in that. And I'm wondering at what point you came into that case and how that, because all was lost, really, with General Flynn. When they had that case, he was really facing prison. What caused you to come in on that case?
He asked me to. it became apparent to him that Covington had a conflict of interest and actually insisted that he seek separate counsel to at least advise him on the conflict of interest. And when he did that, it was me, and it was obvious that there were very serious issues in the case in multiple areas, including the fact that there had been this egregious conflict that, frankly, we have argued in our pleadings should have required Covington to withdraw from representing him as early as August of 2017. Because they did the Foreign Agent Registration Act filing that came into the crosshairs of special counsel and was used as leverage against General Flynn, leaving them to decide whether they would subscribe to the Flynn lied to his lawyers theory of the government or admit that they had made some potential errors in the filing, which if they had done, and frankly, I don't even think they made any material errors in the filing. The government's allegations themselves as to the FARA violations were false. They alleged certain false statements in the FARA filing, but they took key words out of the phrases to create one of them, and other phrases came precisely from information Covington had been given by another law firm. So it was really the false statement allegations by the government that were false. But Covington is actually, you know, Eric Holder and Michael Chertoff's law firm, and
okay.
I don't think it's viewed as conservative.
Okay. Yep. Okay. I want to just highlight, if I might, when I started thinking about General Flynn's case as a lay person, I was trying to kind of make notes myself to the highlights. And I just want to remind people, this will be rudimentary, because I want you to talk about things that are not so rudimentary. Just to remind people, General Flynn was, he campaigned with President Trump, which was very bold. He was one of the only national security figures who had, well, he was the only one who countered Barack Obama on the notion that Al-Qaeda had been defeated. And that put him on the bad list, among other things. So the FBI actually set him up in the White House. They came in the first, 2 weeks? Maybe he was just new in his office. The first week. You know what? I should let you tell it. Well, how did the FBI set him up, Sydney?
It turns out it was even more complicated than we knew. They started it back in August, July or August of 2016. Not long after the Republican convention, I think. And it turns out that Flynn was the key part of the insurance policy. We didn't learn important aspects of this until December of this past year when the Inspector General's report came out, because the prosecutor has been hiding all of it for a long time. And information was dribbled out in the last year after Flynn entered his plea of guilty on false information and the threat of his son being indicted the very next day if he didn't cooperate. And that was a hideous and unwarranted threat, but it certainly, you know, provided the leverage they needed to coerce his guilty plea, along with him not having the proper information on which to base it, and the government having made up the entire case. But it turns out that on August 15, if you'll recall, Strzok and Page texted each other about the insurance policy they discussed in McCabe's office.
Yep, in case they couldn't get the president out of office, this was their backup plan.
Right. Then on August 16, the very next day, they opened the file on Flynn. They had already opened it on Papadopoulos and Manafort and Page. So they opened it on Flynn the day after they talk about the insurance policy in McCabe's office. And then the day after that, as we just learned this past December, they sent an FBI agent into what was supposed to have been a confidential presidential briefing of the candidate, precisely because General Flynn was going to be one of the only three people there on the side of the campaign. And they did it to assess General Flynn, gauge his mannerisms, so they would have a baseline read, essentially, quote, if they needed to interview him later for any reason as a subject of the investigation. So they were planning then that if Trump was elected to the White House, they would, and Flynn was in the White House, they would interview him once he got there. And then our briefs, which are available on my website at sydneypowell.com, outline in detail how it all came down, including the fact that they literally schemed and planned about how and when to interview him in such a way as to keep him relaxed and unguarded. So not only did they not warn him of his rights, they schemed to keep him unaware of the fact that he was even the subject of the interview. He did not know they were, quote, investigating him.
Yeah. Sydney, we have to take a break, but let me interject from my husband, the FBI agent's perspective, something you well know. The FBI, just prior to this, did not go into the White House to do a very dangerous interview with a member of the president's team without permission, without trepidation. You just didn't do that prior to this, but they did. And the agents who actually were there said, both of them, they didn't think Flynn had lied, and yet the FBI later charged him with lying. It is an amazing story. We can't tell it all in this conversation, but Sydney Powell is representing General Flynn, and maybe we won't get into all the details, but we do want to know what's happening now, Sydney. When we come back, we'll talk about that, and also this book she's just written called Conviction Machine. Fascinating, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
And let me tell you, When you have text messages, Mr. Strzok, the way you do, saying the things you did, you'd been better off coming in here and say, look, that was my bias. And you kind of get around to that a little bit when you say, hey, you know, everybody's got political views. Those are called biases, and we all have them. And you have come in here and said, I had no bias. And you do it with a straight face. And I watched you in the private testimony you gave. And I told some of the other guys, he is really good. He's lying. He knows. We know he's lying. And he could probably pass a polygraph.
Point.
It's amazing.
Mr. Chairman.
No, this is my
Mr.
time.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
It needs
point
to be
of order.
Paused.
This point of order.
No.
The general state is point of order.
A member of this committee just asserted that this witness, who is under oath and a former agent of the FBI, lied. There is no evidence of that. I ask him to withdraw it.
I do not withdraw it. He is not a member of Congress. It's not a violation of the rule. And just as you have been expressing bias through your members about what a hero
there is not a single person on this committee
lied.
Who has ever characterized a witness
gentleman
that
from
lied.
Rhode Island. Gentlemen,
it's my time.
That's a disgrace.
Gentlemen from Rhode Island will suspend.
Him. No, the disgrace
Mr.
what this man has done.
The gentleman
to
from
justice.
Texas will suspend for a
there
moment.
There is the disgrace. And it won't be recaptured anytime soon because of the damage you've done to the justice system. And I've talked to FBI agents around the country. You've embarrassed them. You've embarrassed yourself. And I can't help but wonder, when I see you looking there with a little smirk, how many times did you look so innocent into your wife's eye and lie to her about Lisa?
Mr. Chairman, this is outrageous.
The credibility of a witness
shame
is always
on
an
chairman.
Issue.
Mr.
And
you chairman, please.
Have you
Mr. Chairman, this is intolerable harassment of the witness.
What is wrong with that? You need your medication.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. That was that special moment when Congressman Louie Gohmert was interrogating, questioning FBI agent Peter Strzok. He is the one whose email we could glean a lot about that insurance policy that Sidney was mentioning a few minutes ago. He was the lead agent working with the Bob Mueller team, and he was having an affair with Lisa Page, and that's what Louie Gohmert was referring to in that interaction. But that was one of those moments where the people involved, and Peter Strzok was the lead person, kind of revealed themselves to be who they really were. That long interview, remember we played it? It was like a moment when we all got to see firsthand. Everything was peeled back and we saw the raw material, and it was not pretty. Sidney Powell was my guest. Sidney, of course, has just written this book called Conviction Machine. Sidney, just your thoughts about that interaction and what that reminds you of.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Peter Strzok was just, the epitome of everything an FBI agent should never be. And here he was, one of the lead counterintelligence investigators in the FBI, a total liar, and willing to do anything. And, you know, Louie Gohmert was right. I mean, if you stand in front of God and witnesses and promise your life to somebody and then betray that, what are you going to do about the unimportant things? So
and
he
was one of those two agents who went to interview Flynn in the White House that first week that we were talking about before the break.
Exactly. So, that Comey joked about on national TV about how he wouldn't have sent him over there under any prior administration. But hey, this is the Trump administration. What the heck? I'll just send him over. And everybody laughed about it and thought that was just really brilliant and clever on his part when it was an absolute breach of protocols, ethics, trust, and everything else that's supposed to exist between the incoming administration, whoever it is, and the FBI. It was hideous.
Sidney, one of the major controversies in that was that agents, when they leave these interviews, they have a form, 302s, I think they're called, where they record in their handwriting and probably type it up later exactly what they remember. They're not, I think, you can't enter them in a court of law, but they are useful in the case and they help the agent to remember his impressions. So, but they aren't changed and they have to be done they have to be done soon. They can't be done like 6 months or a year later. So it's my understanding that one of those 302s disappeared. What can you tell us about that, of that encounter?
Right. Well, they take handwritten notes. Usually one agent asks questions, the other agent takes notes. In this case, both Strzok and the other agent, who happens to be the one that was in the presidential briefing, of course, both took some notes. They did not come out and write the 302 immediately, or if they did, the government has refused to produce that one. We know it exists because there are references to a prior 302 in the Page Strzok text messages, and they've essentially admitted they have not given us the original one. It turns out that it went through numerous edits, including the addition of information, supposedly information, that was not in either agent's notes. And there is one situation where the notes say one thing and the final 302 says the exact opposite. So I wouldn't call them highly reliable in their ability to record information. The Judge Sullivan, who is the judicial hero of my first book, License to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice, is the judge in the Flynn case. And one of the reasons I've bragged about Judge Sullivan for 6 years all over the country is because he's the Brady judge. He's the judge who threw out the Ted Stevens case because of egregious government misconduct in hiding Brady evidence. We filed a huge Brady motion on Flynn's behalf to get, among other things, the original 302. And there's also a document the government has admitted exists in the Department of Justice that completely exonerates Flynn of all things Russia, dated January 30, 2017, while he was still in the White House. They only gave us a 2 or 3 line statement from it that's not even a quote. And Sullivan denied our motion for that actual document and our motion for any of the Brady material we identified, even from the government's own admissions of things that they had that are exculpatory.
And exculpatory means
thing for everybody to know is that Flynn was a Democrat. He was Obama's head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. Right. He was a Democrat all his life, but he spoke out against the problem with ISIS. He saw that coming. He tried to warn everybody about it. It turns out he was vehement about the problems in Afghanistan that the administration was ignoring. His debriefing on that can be found at the Washington Post website in the Afghanistan papers. That information was just released recently. He was going to audit the intel agencies because he knew they're running billions in off-book ops. And he was going to reduce the National Security Council from the bloated hundreds of people that Obama had put on it to what it ought to be, a tight working group. And none of them liked it. They all, I mean, he got a target on his back from when he spoke out about ISIS, and Obama wound up asking him to leave as DIA.
Yes, so the bottom line of that is that the deep state, as I'm happy to call it because it's really true, we're out to get him. We know that before he ever joined the Trump team. And when he joined the Trump team, that was probably the real target. That's when the target got blazing red. And so they came after him with a vengeance. And so the thing, all right, so a couple
Clapper
of the
had
other.
Said, Clapper had told David Ignatius, the reporter for the Washington Post, that there was no way Flynn could be incoming NSA. And essentially to take the kill shot on Flynn, and Ignatius' big article that triggered it all came out 2 days later.
All right, so General Flynn is charged. And you know, even early on, before he was charged, Sidney, I remember that it was Sally Yates, I think. I believe this is a conjunction. I know it is. That she invoked this old, old statute written like in the late 1700s that had never been used, the Logan Act, and accused
right.
General Flynn as National Security Advisor of talking to the Russian ambassador in breach of, you know, a statute as though he had no right as the incoming National Security Advisor to do that. So the ground was being laid to damage him in every way possible. So they finally did get him, and you've already said that they were threatening his son. And he finally pleaded guilty to one charge. They couldn't get anything on him. Is that true, Sidney? Did they find out he was an agent of Russia? Did they find
Lord,
out that he
no.
was... colluding.
I mean, he's an American hero. And the damnedest thing is they had absolved him of all that while he was still in the White House and didn't bother to tell the president or inform the White House counsel. Instead, they hid all that, continued to push through the media and every other way they could think of for his ouster. And then after he was outed, they finalized the 302 and used that, re-enter it for the Mueller investigation to keep the obstruction hoax going. If you'll remember, Comey ran to the White House the day after Flynn left on February 14th. Flynn left the 13th. Comey goes to the White House, sits down and talks to President Trump, and Trump says, Flynn's such a good guy, I hope you can see to let this go.
That's right.
Well, they'd already let it go. But did Comey tell the president that? No. He runs out and starts the whole obstruction hoax.
Yeah,
so they had to prosecute Flynn. They had to continue. Special counsel had to figure out a prosecution of Flynn to keep the obstruction hoax against the president alive.
Yeah, Sydney, let me just interject. You know this well, but I just for explaining this to listeners. So Comey was suggesting that by President Trump saying to him, General Flynn was a good guy, and I hope you can see Flint to whatever, fill in the blanks, that was obstruction of justice. And that's what Comey, as you said, he knew well they had exonerated Flynn, but they didn't tell the president. And he goes out and claims that the president is trying to obstruct justice, praying that he might have obstructed justice because Comey was complicit with Peter Strzok and the rest of them and trying to get the president out of office. It's just such a disgrace. I can hardly bear repeating it, to be honest with you.
It is a profane outrage.
So Flynn gets charged, and then the really dark day, and I know this is still before the judge, and I can't expect you to comment on this, but when the judge, Emmett Sullivan, who you had praised for a long time, decided to ream General Flynn in court, and I actually think he called him a traitor to his country. That must have been gut-wrenching for you that day.
I was there that day. It was before I was counsel. It was when I was writing about the case and following it as a legal commentator. But it was absolutely appalling, and everybody in that courtroom was stunned. He used the word treason. And then took a recess for an hour, so the media ran with the word treason for over an hour before Judge Sullivan came back in and sort of walked it back. But
it's unbelievable.
The damage had already been done.
Yes, absolutely. And so here you've got the judge that you had hoped, and again, before you were the counsel, you had hoped, I'm sure, privately, as an attorney and former federal prosecutor, that this judge would bring justice and that he would be the one that would make sure the evidence that the federal government was withholding would be released, but it didn't happen. Would you say that most of it has happened by now or still not?
Oh, no. No, we haven't gotten the first piece of the evidence that I identified as exculpatory because he denied the motion, so the government hasn't produced it.
All right, so what is the state of the case today? What's happening?
Well,
anything?
We have a motion to dismiss for egregious government misconduct that's pending to dismiss the entire prosecution based on the Inspector General's report and the government's continued hiding of the information that would exonerate General Flynn, not the least of which is the fact that they sent the agent in there back in August in violation of all protocols to the presidential briefing. And hid that information from us until December of this past year. That's just a horrible. It was unprecedented in the first place. There wasn't a rule for it because nobody ever thought anybody would be that outrageous. And Christopher Wray has said it will never happen again. So it shouldn't have happened in the first place. And the government should be held to account for that. We also have pending motions to withdraw his plea based on everything from the government's breach itself of the plea agreement because they tried to get him to lie against his former business partner last summer in a trial in the Eastern District of Virginia. And when he refused to lie, prosecutor Brandon Van Grack, who was on the Mueller squad and still is on the case, has been retaliating against him in multiple ways for the last year, culminating in withdrawing his sentencing recommendation for probation and his motion advising the court that Flynn provided substantial assistance. And then also we have a motion to withdraw the plea because of the conflict of interest that Covington had that was non-consentable. In other words, they were required to withdraw even if they had given him proper written information about it and obtained informed consent. And it was so egregious he could consent to it. And when they did tell him about it, they didn't use the right rules and obfuscated the point so bad nobody could understand it. And it was too late. It was too little, too late.
Okay,
we've got all those motions pending.
But that judge has to agree to hear those motions, right? It's still in his
hands. Well, he will have to decide them at some point.
Yeah. Okay, well, Sydney, stay tuned. Stay with me anyway, and the rest of you stay tuned. The book is called, that Sydney's written, and we're going to get to that, Conviction Machine, Standing Up to Federal Prosecutorial Abuse. It's just out, and we're going to talk about what Sydney has seen beyond this to make her, to inspire her, as it were, to write this book. Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
You brought up Harvey, Paul Manafort, or Roger Stone, so they're not exposed to coronavirus in jail.
Well, I just tell you this. Roger Stone was treated very unfairly. Paul Manafort, the black book, turned out to be a fraud. We learned that out during the various last number of weeks and months. They had a black book that came out of Ukraine, turned out to be a fraud. Turned out to be a fraud. They convicted a man, turned out to be a fraud. General Flynn was a highly respected person, and it turned out to be a scam on him. The FBI said he didn't lie, and Mueller's people wanted him to go to jail. Okay? So what am I going to do? You'll find out what I'm going to do. I'm not going to say what I'm going to do, but I will tell you the whole thing turned out to be a scam, and it turned out to be a disgrace to our country. And it was a takedown of a duly elected president. And these people suffered greatly. General Flynn, I mean, what they did to him. And even the FBI said, and they had some, and nobody bigger fan of the FBI than me at the level of the people that really matter. But the top of the FBI was scum. And what they did to General Flynn, and you know it, and everybody knows it, was a disgrace. He was in the service for over 30 years. He ends up being a general and respected. Respected. And almost his first day in office, they come in with papers. They want to investigate him. Never happened before. And now the tables are turned. Investigate the investigators, I guess. These were crooked people. These are bad people. These are very dangerous people. You know what they are, though? They're scum. They're human scum.
That's the president, and I think he's right. I feel as vociferous about this as he does. And let me just say, this new book by Sidney Powell and also by Harvey Silvergate, both of them have prosecuted a lot of cases. And on their experience with this, they have seen how corrupt the criminal justice system has become. And the Justice Department, and fill in the blanks, the courts. It's just amazing. The book, by the way, exposes a lot of this, but also gives solutions. So I don't know if we'll have time to get to all of that, but let me just borrow their words. They demonstrate that the federal criminal justice system is dangerously effective at turning citizens into convicts. It's a system with overzealous prosecutors, perjury traps, negligent judges, perverse limits on self-defense, vague and overabundant criminal statutes, insufficient requirements for criminal intent, and no accountability for prosecutors. And I actually think we could break it down to individual cases, but certainly we're watching this happen as we talked about General Flynn and also about the president. Let me ask you about a few personalities before we get off the crossfire hurricane, which was the whole operation against President Trump. Do you have faith, Sydney, in the Attorney General Barr being able to do something about a specifically crossfire hurricane, but also the broader issue of the messed upness of the Justice Department?
I think the world of Bill Barr, and I am cautiously optimistic that he is making a lot of significant changes. I just don't have any inside information whatsoever to, I'm not part of that system. In fact, I'm on the other side of the Justice Department in the biggest case in the country, probably. Yes. So I would not be one to get that information. But I'm hoping that Durham is for real, and according to John Solomon, some indictment should be coming down soon. I think that's crucial to restore any hope in the rule of law in this country and save the republic. And that's one reason I've advocated so strongly that the Justice Department and the FBI take responsibility for the government misconduct in the Flynn case and move to dismiss it themselves, because people need to have confidence in our justice system. The integrity of the department and the FBI were destroyed during the Obama administration, absolutely destroyed in multiple ways. And the Flynn case exemplifies everything that is wrong in our criminal justice system, from why the innocent plead guilty, as Judge Jed Rakoff wrote about several years ago, to the FBI's abuses, to how the machine will absolutely crush you if you wind up in it.
Yes, and I would say the current FBI director, Christopher Wray, of course, has been discussed at our house for obvious reasons. And we do not see evidence that the FBI has done barely anything to bring its ranks back in order, to bring justice that people can see, to discipline their own. There have been some, I mean, Peter Strzok is no longer with the FBI. Lisa Page, I'm not sure if she was fired or if she just left. But Andrew McCabe is, free, exonerated. So that's very discouraging, Sydney, for all the reasons that you just said. Your thoughts about
completely. That? I have no confidence in Christopher Wray. In fact, he was Andrew Weissman's supervisor when Weissman was on the Enron task force and violating every rule of prosecutorial conduct in the book. And Wray helped him get the Attorney General's Award of Excellence. So, no, I have zero confidence in Christopher Wray.
Yeah, well,
and I don't think there have been any material changes at the FBI. If they had, they would produce to me the original 302.
Well, he says that, doesn't he? He says, we're taking care of it and that'll never happen again. That's his answer to everything. But we never see anything. We don't see anything legit. You'd think he would be so ashamed himself that he would want to go out of his way to prove to the American people and to the president that the FBI is being restored. But he is not doing that. And I have to say, this is my editorial remark. If President Trump should win in 2020, which I pray that he does, I hope one of the first things he does is kick Christopher Wray to the curb and put someone in that position. Heaven knows there are so many fine, fine, honest people who could fill that role and clean that agency up. And speaking of that, Sydney, you and Harvey, you talk about the abuses of the system, but you also present solutions, which I don't know. I did not read that part. So I find myself so discouraged. I don't see how it could be fixed, but you think it could be. How? How would we fix all of this?
Well, there are a number of things that would make a huge difference. The first is requiring FBI agents to record their interviews, because relying on their handwritten notes, even for the most well-intentioned agent, is not a reliable way to record an interview. And no unrecorded interview should be used as a basis for a federal felony when it depends on intonation and the agent's memories, and it's two agents against one person. For example, Flynn told them things that they didn't put in the 302 that are important or in their notes, and he didn't tell them things that did wind up in the 302 and weren't in their notes. So there's just no way anyone should be held responsible for a five-year federal felony based on the recollection and note-taking of an FBI agent when every agent has in their pocket a recording device that would capture the conversation correctly. And it should also be warned. Not only was he not warned, he was set up with the idea that it wasn't even him that was the subject of the interview. He was helping two guys that stopped by, one of whom had been in the training session at the White House the day or two before.
Isn't that already against FBI regulation? I mean, don't they
the whole thing was.
They were supposed
to have contacted White House counsel. You've got Comey bragging on national TV about how clever he was to send him over there. Sally Yates was livid that they had violated protocol. There were multiple arguments documented between people in DOJ about it. That's in the summary of exculpatory information the defense was given but didn't use. It's one thing after the other. They broke every single rule. There is nothing about the Flynn prosecution that was proper, not one single thing.
Sydney, I'm going to interrupt our conversation just for a second because I want to interject. If people think that you're overstating because you have a special interest, this was the Attorney General in an interview with Laura Ingraham just about 2 weeks ago, and this is clip 7. Let's hear how he assessed what was taking place. Clip 7.
I think the president has every right to be frustrated because I think what happened to him was one of the greatest travesties in American history. Without any basis, they started this investigation of his campaign. And even more concerning, actually, is what happened after the campaign, a whole pattern of events while he was president. To sabotage the presidency, and I think that, or at least had the effect of sabotaging the presidency.
Well, that was General Barr. Those are pretty strong words. Were you surprised at how candid he was?
I was really glad to see that. I just hope that something comes from it, because until people who do things like this are prosecuted themselves, it's going to happen again. I mean, that's the problem. That's why I wrote License to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice, that I self-published in 2014. Many of the same violators wound up in all of this, including the lead villain, Andrew Weissman, who Mueller has been protecting and promoting for 20 years despite his utter lack of ethics and willingness to abuse the legal system to destroy people for his social and political objectives.
It's just shocking. It really is. And then, of course, there's the FISA court, and that has been one of the most shocking abuses. Honestly, Sydney, I'm going to get personal again. My husband was, when he was with the FBI in headquarters at D.C., he was an attorney, and he used to go into the FISA court and present the potential warrants or whatever permissions from the FISA judges. And so he knows how careful he was once. He had to go back and add the color of a car that was mentioned in all the evidence. That's how strict they were at the time he was presenting after 9/11. And so the FISA court has been so violated. I guess, I mean, not a legal term,
yes.
But yeah. So what's happened with that?
I don't know. They allowed themselves to be. I mean, if I were one of those FISA court judges that had been lied to like they were, I would have had those agents and lawyers or whoever in my chambers, and they'd be in contempt of court and prosecuted.
You know, Sydney,
and frankly, having read the applications myself, there wasn't a shred of probable cause in the applications for the Carter Page FISA applications. Not a shred. There was no firsthand allegation of wrongdoing by anyone.
We should say that
in my day as a prosecutor, you couldn't have gotten a warrant for a known crack house based on allegations like that.
Yes, and we should say that those we are getting more and more information because of the COVID-19 swallowing up our headlines. People are not hearing about the various things that are happening about this, but things are happening. Like there was a lot of declassification just last week. And I also know that two senators, I think it's Johnson and Grassley, are continuing to go after. They're not letting it go. And so that's I think, some glimmer of hope, Sydney, that maybe at some point there will be some justice. But your book is about the broader issue. It's not just Lynn's case. It's about the broad issue of a criminal of the Justice Department and the way people are treated. And in the solution part of it, you say that there are things that people, real honest-to-goodness, plain old people can do. I don't really know what that would be. What could people do?
Well, one thing, and this is far more important than people realize, remind yourself every day of the presumption of innocence. We all tend to believe what we hear on the news or read in the paper, that somebody's indicted on such and such and they're guilty. That's not necessarily true. They're supposed to have the presumption of innocence. When you walk into jury service, the person sitting there is not guilty of anything until the government proves it to you beyond a reasonable doubt based on admissible evidence. And we encourage people to welcome jury service. We need good, intelligent, willing to use common sense people to serve on juries. It's not something you should shirk or try to get out of. It's very important. A single juror is the last bastion of democracy because a single juror can stop a wrongful conviction. If the judge is railroading the defendant, or you can tell the prosecutors are just trying to crush somebody, there's always the option of voting to acquit. And people need to exercise that option. The government has a 98-point-something conviction rate. It's next to impossible to get an acquittal in a criminal case. That's why we call it the conviction machine.
Yes, because
in cases like the Flynn case, he's not guilty of anything. There was no crime.
It is one of the most shocking, disgraceful parts of this story. And of course, the jury, we haven't seen President Trump's story. He's not finished. Neither is General Flynn's, by the way. And by the way, if you'd like, it's SydneyPowell.com, SydneyPowell.com. Her book is called Conviction Machine, Standing Up to Federal Prosecutorial Abuse. It's just out. And we highly recommend this book. Sydney's a great writer. And she's joined Harvey Silverglate to produce this book. Sydney, God bless you.
Harvey wrote 3 felonies a day. So he's been on this topic for about the same length of time I've been on Life in July.
So tremendous expertise and really very readable, as for my experience with what Sydney writes. So again, it's called Conviction Machine. Sydney, thank you so much, and God bless you and keep you safe. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Thank you, Sandy.
AFR Talk.